Development as a global objective for improving human welfare is a relatively recent concept. It was first embodied in the United Nations Charter, which states, I quote, "The United Nations shall promote higher standards of living, full employment, and conditions of economic and social progress and development." In time, at least among practicing economists in academia and policymakers in government, development came to be seen as improved economic opportunity through the accumulation of capital and rising productivity. The implicit assumption was that economic growth would lead to rising living standards, increases in life expectancy, reduced mortality, a reduction in the incidence of poverty, and so on, all of them, of course, worthy social goals. Let me share with you some interesting statistics that capture some of this progress made. Between 1950 and 2017, world GDP per capita expanded at an annual average rate of about 2.1%. And this expansion, although with considerable regional variations, was associated with a remarkable evolution of three key indicators of human welfare. In the roughly half a century between 1960 and 2017, infant mortality fell from 122 to 29 per 1,000 live births. Average life expectancy at birth rose from 52 to 72 years, a 38% increase, which is nothing short of spectacular. And adult illiteracy fell from 53 to 14%. Equally impressive was the sharp drop in the incidence of poverty. Data from the World Bank show that between 1990 and 2015, as the economy globalized, the number of poor people living on less than $1.90 per day, which is the poverty line defining extreme poverty, fell from about 2 billion to about 750 million people. The reduction in extreme poverty, however, was largely accounted for by the high economic growth rates in China and to a lesser extent in India. In fact, if you use a poverty line of $3.20 per day, which is not so austere, the number of people is closer to 2 billion living under the poverty line, which of course is still unacceptably high. While this leaves still hundreds of millions of people living under very harsh conditions, the existence of a positive trend was unexpected and undeniable. As noted by Richard Cooper, a well-known, highly regarded international economist at Harvard University, I quote, "Performance in the period 1950 to 2000 can only be described as fantastic in terms of the perspective of 1950, in the literal sense that if someone had forecast what actually happened, he would have been dismissed by contemporaries as living in a world of fantasy," unquote. The observation that economic growth had been the main engine of poverty reduction and other improvements in human welfare led many to ask themselves what could be done to accelerate growth everywhere, particularly in Africa, where poverty actually rose during this period. The question acquired particular urgency among policymakers in the developing world, given the pressing need to continue to make progress in improving living standards against the background of rising expectations among their populations, partly linked to developments in information and communication technologies. In a very influential book published in 2002, the American economist William Easterly said that he cared about economic growth because, I quote, "it makes the lives of poor people better and frees the poor from hunger and disease," unquote. He then proceeded to show that growth improves infant mortality, that, for instance, in Africa, 500,000 deaths could have been averted if growth in the decade of the 1980s had been 1.5% higher. The above insights, in turn, contributed to an intense debate among professional economists and policymakers about the relative importance of various factors, policies, and institutions in creating the conditions for sustained growth. What is their relative importance? How do they interact with each other? How successful have countries been in identifying them and adopting them?